How does such a poem come into being?
That one is a bit of a muse, I think. A lot of poems happen because I'm describing something, whether it's an emotion or an incident or whatever. This one, I think I was describing almost an uncertainty. I've wandered a lot, obviously, and I still haven't pinned down an awful lot of the meanings of life and you know, such nebulous things as that. So I'm always thinking, I'm always wondering, and I'm always asking myself questions. And out of all of that, a lot of nebulous things form in my head, which I follow wherever they want to go.
You just sit down and write them.
And that one just came about, you know, the wandering breeze. Maybe I started writing about something real and it just turned into an abstract. The thing is about a lot of poems, especially the ones that I'm happiest with, is that they tell me where they want to go. I pretty much follow.
Yeah, I think a lot of writing is that way. You sit down and you write and you realize later, where did that come from?
So maybe the poem itself was trying to challenge me rather than me try to formulate the poem. So, but it's an interesting one.
It's got good, as you say, it's got that lyrical flow. So it makes it easy for a person to read and to hear and, be drawn into it to contemplate their own personal meaning to it. From your website, and I'm not quite sure where to go with this, but I'm going to try. We're going to try. You say that readers will be drawn in to seek personal parallels of the words and to disturb emotions of their own. And the two that you read feel soft to me, if you know what I mean. They feel very contemplative or something. Would you say that's something in a lot of your poems?
That's definitely true of a lot of them. And there are some love poems in here that many of which are based on personal experience. And I'm sure I'm not the only person to have loved and lost in my life. So as people read some of those poems, for example, I'm sure that they'll be able to draw those parallels, relate the emotions that I'm putting into verse, relate them to their own emotions, how they felt when they went through a similar sad or even happy, loving phase of their lives.
And so is that what you mean by disturbing emotions? That it sort of brings up those feelings from their past?
Yeah. I don't want people to read my poems as if it's a flat piece of paper. It's a three-dimensional piece of paper with a lot of depth to it. And I want people to go into the depth of what's behind the words. When they get behind the words, that's when they're going to start finding themselves situated behind those words as well.
Okay.
And I think that's what makes a good poem good, is when people can do that. Otherwise, it just becomes a flat piece of paper that people are just reading.
Right. And I think that makes it more interesting for the reader. I mean, if we just look at it and think, oh, no, well, that's Jim's life, they can easily put it aside. But you say, well, okay, that was Jim, but I remember when.
No, I think with a lot of my poems, people are going to be looking at them and thinking, you know, I know exactly what he means by that because I've been there.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a physical place. I'm talking about an emotional place.
An emotional place.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that from your website I was noticing that you said that the poems are organized randomly. Okay, I'm a librarian. I want things in order. How does that work for the reader?
I once did a management course in the States where they tested us to see if we were right-brained or left-brained.
Okay.
And at the end of my little session, the facilitator said to me, whatever you do, do not become an engineer or an accountant.
Okay.
your brain has no structure.
So, that's wonderful.
That's pretty much how my life has been as well. I mean, my journeys were never planned. I have never yet got to a country that I wanted to go to and live in. I've never made it. I've tried, but I've never made it.
There's a story there.
And I've always ended up living in Canada.
Okay.
I never planned to come and live in Canada. It was just circumstances. I had to come to Canada for a specific reason, which actually wasn't of my choosing. The British Virgin Islands, the place I've lived longest in my life. I hadn't even heard of Tortola, the island where I lived. I hadn't heard of it up to about a week before I got there. I just delivered a yacht there and Kind of stayed. And you know, things like that. I tried to sail to Australia and ended up living in Portugal. So the reasons behind them, a lot of these are in the books, like the Portuguese sojourn was as a result of two storms, one at sea and one when I got there. We survived the storm at sea with a boat intact, but then we got hit by another one when we were in Portugal and it trashed the boat, so we had to put the boat back together again.
So your books of poetry are like your life, start off with one and a storm comes in and you're on a different page?
They're in completely random order.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they're not chronological at all. I've got a couple of stories that go back to, or a story and a poem that go back to when I was really young, as a, you know, preteen, growing up on the banks of a river.
Okay.
And that comes somewhere halfway through the book. So
it's going to be an interesting read for our public, I think.
Well, I'm hoping. But they're the sort of books that you can just pick up and read a story. You don't have to read it cover to cover in one sitting.
Well, actually, that's something, too, I find about poetry, is that it's not the kind of thing you read cover to cover. You pick one or two, and then you contemplate something like The Wandering Breeze.
And I've deliberately tried to put lots of different moods in there. So depending on if you have a few favorites, and you know what mood you're in, you can just say, oh, I feel like reading that particular poem because it suits my mood right now.
Okay.
They're not all the same by any means. They're all over the place, just like my life.
What suits your mood now? You have another poem?
I'm too busy trying to get the books finished. I haven't written anything for a few weeks.
That's a good point.
The hard work is after the books are published, I'm finding. Getting them published and then getting them out there.
That's right. On that note, where can people get copies of your books?
They're on all the normal places. Mm-hmm. Amazon, Kindle, Chapters, all those good places.
That's right. Your website.
My website, you can buy them from the publisher, which I'd much rather you did, because I get more royalties from the publisher than I do from the other places.
Exactly.
Which is Friesen Press.
That's right.
And from me, I've got some copies.
Mm-hmm. I actually met you at the Writers' Community of York Region meeting. Do you attend that somewhat regularly? Because a person could go to one of their meetings.
Oh, yes. I'll be there this coming Sunday, actually. Mm-hmm. And I always take some books along, as a lot of writers that attend these meetings do, because there's always people that would like to buy some.
That's right.
Hopefully.
That's how you find it. So before we run out of time, I would like, if you don't mind, some more poetry.
Okay, here's a more light-hearted one. As I said, I use different moods.
All right.
I preface all my poems with a quote from somebody a lot more famous than me, which isn't difficult. This one was from Lord Byron, and he once said, "There's naught, no doubt, so much the spirit calms as rum and true religion." Well, suffice to say, this is not about religion. So
okay. Well, you're a sailor.
It's called Dark Caribbean Rum. You can talk of the finest clarets or the best of the Côtes du Rhône, sing praise to the vines that produce the great wines, such as Burgundy, Bordeaux, or Beaune. When all's said and done, there is only the one that counts when the evening has come, with need to unwind and relax the old mind. That's Dark Caribbean Rum. There's merit in most of the scotches, and vodka is well worth a try, and no need to pass if you're offered a glass graced with gin or with bourbon or rye. But when someone asks for what's best from the casks and says they would like to have some, it's better than not that you pour them a tot of Dark Caribbean Rum. And lager is grand at a party, and stout is quite pleasant to down. Of all the fine brews, there's some good ones to choose in a bitter or pale ale or brown. But should you need to think of a versatile drink enjoyed both in mansion and slum, there's really no doubt what you're thinking about. It's Dark Caribbean Rum. Mm-hmm. So as you try all that's been brewing and sample whatever's distilled and put each to test so you'll know what is best for your palate to always be thrilled and tried every brand bought from every land till your mind and your taste buds are numb, you'll honour your thirst with the one that came first. That's Dark Caribbean Rum. So pour from the flask if you're up to the task in measures the width of your thumb. And don't try to hoggle that glorious grog, but let's share a toast to the one we love most. The Dark Caribbean Rum.
That is much more fun, isn't it?
There's a few fun ones in there.
That is good. We'll have to introduce you to Bill from the pub show. There is a pub show with Whistle Radio.
Oh,
and he
wonderful.
Would love that poem, so I'll have to make sure he hears it.
That was actually written with rum that is made still in the British Virgin Islands to the old Royal Navy recipe, the proper grog.
Oh, really?
And that was, I actually sat in one of their pubs one night, and I just thought, okay, there's a poem coming. That was one of those that I had to keep up with it.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
So not a lot of tweaking when you were done?
Not a lot. The good ones are the easiest ones to write. Mm-hmm. The ones that are the hardest to read are the ones that are the hardest to write.
Oh, so what kind of relationship do you have with them? Do you have favorites? Do you prefer the easy ones?
Oh, these are all easy ones.
Oh, these are all easy ones.
I've got a huge file, much bigger than this one, which says under construction.
Oh, really?
And they're the ones that I've struggled with, and a lot of those end up not being completed.
Oh,
because they are just too, they're not happening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can force a poem.
No.
A poem either has to be there or not.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, yeah, sometimes you can hear a poet that, read some poetry that's been forced, and it's too much work. Yeah. Much work for the reader.
I've got a couple of hundred completed ones, but mm-hmm. I've probably got as many mm-hmm. under construction.
Under construction, I like that.
And I wonder how many of those will ever get completed.
Huh. How many poems do you have, or do you have a rough idea?
I'd say a couple of hundred.
A couple of hundred?
Yeah.
So you've got a few more books than you.
Well, that's the plan. This is my mm-hmm. retirement career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. More sailing?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
It's in my blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And living this far away from the sea is, it's not easy.
You miss the tide?
Mm.
Yeah, I'm from the East Coast. Never thought, you know, coming west that would be a big deal. Okay, I'm just coming west. And after about 5 years, I said to my husband, I need to get back. I've got to put my feet in the mud flaps. Mm. Because it's different. It's not the same here.
I used to be country manager for an American shipping line up here mm-hmm. in Canada. They transferred me up here. I was based here in Toronto, but we did a lot of business out in St. John's, New Brunswick, I should say.
St. John is New Brunswick.
St. John, New Brunswick. Oh, that's
right.
It.
Yeah.
Sorry, all you New Brunswickers out there.
Well, there's the two of them, St. John.
But the first thing I did when I get to the hotel was just go and stand next to low tide.
Yeah.
And just take a big breath of low tide.
There is the
seaweed, the mud, the salt.
That's right.
Just wonderful.
That's right. Actually, that was the first experience my husband had in the ocean when I took him back to meet my family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good swimmer. And I was a little concerned about this because I'm not a good swimmer. None of my family is really.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a look at the island. He was going to swim out to that island. And I said, just remember, dear, none of us can come out there to save you. Mm-hmm. And that's a wicked undertow. So it took him a long time because the water is frigid,
mm-hmm.
really frigid. So finally he dunks down, pops up, and rushes out of the water. And I said, are you okay? Because I didn't know it was going to taste like that.
Yeah. Salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Well, we're coming up to the end. Do you have one last poem to leave our listeners with?
I'm going to give you a love poem.
Oh, okay.
How's that?
Okay.
The contextual quote is by Alexander Pope. A man should never be ashamed to own he has been in the wrong, which is but saying, in other words, that he is wiser today than he was yesterday. This is called Unforgiven. There's no way I'll forgive you all the suffering I've felt that brought me all those anguished tears I'd weep. There's no exoneration for the ache my heart was dealt that caused these lonely days, those desperate nights devoid of sleep. Nor any absolution for this sadness still inside, nor for the utter agony I've known. For why should I forgive you for the way our loving died, when all the blame that must be borne is mine and mine alone? For you are not responsible for any wrongful deed beyond the gift of being a loving friend. You gave to me your beauty, and I paid you with my need, requiring far more energy than anyone should spend. So how can I accuse you for the times we two have shared, that you showed me a better way to live, that you had loved so tenderly and genuinely cared? That you received far less than all the gifts that you would give? Of what could you be guilty then, for which you might atone? For gently trying to slow my racing heart? For teaching me the many magic roads that you have shown? For showing how my past might end and future now might start? No, there can be no accusation, there can be no blame. There's nothing to forgive or to forget. For you were never guilty. It is I who bears the shame for how our loving friendship has so tragically been set. So how can I forgive you for an uncommitted crime which generates no need to reprehend? Nor can I beg forgiveness, but I'll ask of you for time to find where I again may earn the right to be your friend. And I will ever thank you for the lessons I have learned that influence how now I choose to live and help me reach that time when I have genuinely earned the right to look back to the fool I was and to forgive.
That's a very nice one to finish with.
And that's one of those that I'm sure there's other guys out there that are going to put themselves in that position and say, yeah.
If they're honest with themselves.
I
quite like that, because we sometimes have a relationship that goes wrong and it is all about blame. And then you have to sit sometimes and think.
I think that's one thing that poetry does for you. It makes you look inside, mm-hmm. and it pulls the honesty out of you.
Oh, nice. poetry for everybody.
It's very therapeutic.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, I very much appreciate you coming in and being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
And hope listeners will come out to the library, pick up a copy of your books, or check out your website and order one for themselves.
That'll be wonderful, too. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Shelf Life, news from the Whitchurch Stouffville Public Library. For more information about library programs and services, check out our website at www.whitchurch-library.on.ca, or you can call the library at 905-642-7323 or toll free at 1-888-603-4292. Or why not visit the library in person at 30 Burkholder Street in Stouffville? Thank you for listening.